This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hello, everyone. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be hosting this podcast today. We are going to be talking about a transition, but not T1 or T2. It's a life transition that is inevitable for 50% of the population and one that usually gets a pretty bad rap. So anyone have any guesses? Well, if you have guessed and you are male, please, please, please stick around. I think that this episode is really important for coaches, husbands, partners, brothers, sons. You get the point. We will be talking about the menopause transition, and with me to set the record straight and pump some positivity into the journey is Dr. Tish Doyle-Baker and Joanna Naney. Dr. Tish Doyle-Baker has a Master's of Sports Science and Exercise Physiology and a Doctor of Public Health and a PhD in Exercise Interventions in Chronic Disease. Her current research involves both clinical populations and female athletes related to reproductive health. She has several grad students currently investigating the development of an algorithm to help female athletes with their performance readiness and lifelong health. Dr. Doyle-Baker is an alpine ski racing coach, and you will often find her ski touring in the mountains or on epic kayaking trips. Tish, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for asking me to be on the show and to get to hear Joanna, which is a bit of a thrill for me.
Well, also with us is Coach Joanna Naimi. Joanna is better known as Coach Jojo and has been coaching athletes with TriDot since 2012. She's a co-founder of Hissy Fit Racing, a member of the Betty Design Elite Squad, and has double-digit Ironman finishes on her accomplished triathlon resume. She has raced the Ironman World Championship 3 times and is a lead instructor for TriDot Pool School. Jo, thanks for being here. I think that this episode is one that our listeners have been waiting for so long, and I can't wait to dive into it with you.
Yay! Go menopause! This is going to be awesome. I'm super excited. I love being on the podcast with Vanessa, and it's quite an honor to be on with Tish as well. So this is going to be great.
And I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. As usual, we're going to start things off with our warm-up question. We will move into the main set, and then we'll cool down with our coach cool down tip. It's going to be a great set today, everybody. Let's get rolling.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
I don't know about you, but I love a good tradition. So I want to know what tradition, habit, or thing from another sport that is not done in triathlon. Which one would you want to see brought over? Let's start with our special guest, Tish. What would you bring over to the sport of triathlon?
Well, at the end of a race, particularly a ski race, if you're an adult, or the end of coaching, ski racing, or any event, outdoor activity, we all look forward to some type of beverage. So hydration is a key. So why not enjoy the outcome with both water and a favorite beverage? And for me, it's usually honey with tea, and on other occasions, a really nice cold beer.
Yes, I actually have my honey with tea sitting with me right here today. So this is not a sporting event, but it definitely warrants a wonderful cup of tea. What about you, Coach Jojo? What tradition or habit from another sport do you think would be an awesome addition to triathlon?
This was a tough one for me as I was thinking about it, but being in my house, I'm going to always say it, lots of men in this house, lots of football going on right now. I would think a lot of athletes would say, how about a timeout? A little timeout, little coach huddle, get to take a breather for a few minutes. Some people may consider this transition, but I, as a coach, say, nope, transition is the fourth discipline. We are hustling. So maybe a timeout would be nice during a full Ironman day to take a breather or to chat with your coach.
I think that is a phenomenal idea and one that should be brought to all race directors all over, because that would be just a great way to have a little reset of your mind or potentially your body and have no time penalty. Now, I don't think this will come as a big surprise to anyone, but I have a fond love of celebration dances. So I'm thinking that it should be 100% mandatory to dance down the red carpet. Or if you're not into dancing down the red carpet, you must have a celebration dance after the finish line. Like, how much fun would that be? I also have another idea, actually. I think it would be pretty awesome to have to complete something like the New Zealand All Blacks haka before jumping in the water at the swim start. I think that would be really fun. And I don't think there's a better way to pump yourself up before hitting the water.
I love that, Vanessa. You know that in Ironman Maryland, the race director used to have high heels at the end of right before you came down the finishing chute, and women could put them on, yes, and prance across. It was just kind of a tribute. Those kind of traditions that were established in certain races is what made those races so special. So I love that when you're talking about dancing down the finish line.
Well, let's throw this out to the people. I want to hear what you have to say. So make sure you're a member of the I Am Trout Facebook page. And look for the warm-up question post to let us all know what sports tradition you think should be brought over to triathlon. I can't wait to see what y'all think.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
You know you're a triathlete or a cyclist when you will talk to pretty much anyone about your bike. And when that bike is a Diamond bike, there is a lot to talk about. My Diamond Marquise is nothing less than a masterpiece. Every detail has been carefully engineered and crafted by the team at Diamond Bikes. I had a very special custom paint job designed to commemorate several strong women in my life, and the smile plastered on my face outlasted the longest ride I have ever done for my first Ironman race. The bikes are industry-leading aerodynamic machines that look and feel awesome. But even beyond that, Diamond as a brand knows how to take care of their athletes. And with 5 different tri-bike models, as well as road, gravel, and mountain bikes, your next bike should absolutely be a Diamond. Tridot and Diamond are a dynamite race day 1-2 punch. Diamond provides you with the Ferrari of bikes, and Tridot Training develops your engine. So we are excited to partner with Diamond on some really cool offers. If you are new to Tridot, we're offering 6 months of the Mark Allen edition of Tridot with the purchase of a Diamond. If you are already a Tridot athlete, we are offering either an upgrade credit or Tridot store credit with your new bike. Head to diamondbikes.com for all the info and to dream up your very own bike. As triathletes practice transition from swim to bike or bike to run, they may come up with a plan that is fully rehearsed, where all items serve a purpose and there is an order in which they choose to proceed. I'm not sure about you, but I practice this transition physically and mentally with the hope of getting through it as quickly and as painlessly as possible. Now, I wish we could say the same for menopause. Wouldn't it be nice if we could plan for this or have a protocol with troubleshooting manual when things take a turn from what a female would consider to be quote unquote normal? Thankfully, as time moves forward, this is more likely going to be a reality as experts continue to uncover the intricacies and solutions for what females experience. And my hope is that after listening to this podcast, we can change the public narrative of menopause from doom and gloom to one of acceptance. I also hope that our audience will gain some tools and strategies that will allow them to feel knowledgeable and have a greater sense of control during a time that can be filled with quite a lot of uncertainty. So I think the first thing that we need to discuss is what the menopause transition actually is. So Tish, can you give us a rundown of what this means?
The menopause transition is probably bigger and broader than most individuals realize. So it can last over, a 10 to 15 or a 16, 18, 20 year period. So the first perspective is to understand that the transition period is quite individual. It does go through certain stages, but it can be different for anyone. And so it's a little bit like thinking of the sense of moving through your life course of changes. And recently you'll see in some of the literature that people are associating chronological age with menopause. So many women are kind of unaware that they might start to have changes related to their fluctuating hormone levels, such as changes in mood and their bleeding pattern, vaginal dryness, or difficulty sleeping, about somewhere 10 years before menopause. And so that's the start of menopause transition. So we could say it coincides with some of the symptoms of aging. Now, while those stages are quite clearly defined, we can also further define those in years, since our introduction with the term menopause is commonly used in relation to menopause transition, but the age of that might be different for everyone. So it may be helpful to note that perimenopause, the start of it, begins in the early menopause transition stage, and that can extend into the early postmenopause stage. However long that may be is different for everyone. So symptom identification is the way that we look at transition. Menopause symptoms can manifest themselves, as we said, years before. And the preparation for menopause, even though you said maybe we can't prepare, but there is this adaptability towards, and I'm going to say, a positive journey towards it. And it should be an early goal in a woman's life to approach healthy aging with consideration that menopause is part of that. Many of us look forward to, I know I can say this because I'm older, to aging because we have less responsibility, we have less association with the idea of fertility, and so we have other things that we can look forward to. And that means that we should think about healthy aging, we should think about menopause, and we should do the exact same thing for both of them. And that is we should prioritize our diet, prioritize sleep, because we probably can get more sleep now.
Yeah.
Think about our sleep routine, and then think about how that might determine what we feel or do in our midlife experience. So if we talk about a review of a number of evidence-based studies, that's referred to as a systematic review, we can see that many women consider that they report their symptoms, but often they forget about their attitude or their perception towards the menopause transition. So their results of these studies, these systematic reviews, demonstrate a relationship between your attitude and what symptoms you experience, suggesting that a more negative attitude surrounding menopause may lead to more menopausal symptoms. Now, this is a little bit like going back to thinking about your positive approach to training and being an athlete. If you are positive in your approach, you may actually have a better workout. And so let's think about how we can approach life and menopause the same way that recreational athletes do, by increasing our chance of reducing our symptoms through our exercise, sleep, diet, and positive attitude. So yeah, that's a very good piece of good news.
That is a really wonderful piece of news for everybody, because I think when we prioritize the things that are important, like sleep and nutrition and exercise, which is what a lot of triathletes do to begin with, it seems like it's setting us up for a little bit of success towards this transition. So I think that's a wonderful takeaway. Already, we're only a few minutes in and we already have a wonderful takeaway that, you know, it's important to prioritize those things, and it will have a more positive outcome.
When we think about post-menopause, we define it as 12 consecutive months of amenorrhea, which means no periods or no menses or no bleeding, whichever term you like. And that can be further divided into early post-menopause and late stage post-menopause. And the way we differentiate this can be through the number of hormones that we have in our body and the level of those hormones. So for example, a follicle-stimulating hormone, which is called FSH, and estrogen, which most people know, stabilize when we are in the final phase of post-menopause. But for some people, that final phase can be a long time, and they can have those symptoms for a long time. So early post-menopause is associated with symptoms such as hot flashes and mood swings. And those two symptoms people talk probably about the most. And they can be affected by exercise participation. In other words, the lifelong goal of being an exerciser may actually keep those symptoms either reduced, or in some cases, I might even talk about later on, that one or two types of exercise may not be the best when you're in that sort of early stage of post-menopause.
Yay! That's another piece of good news for all triathletes out there.
Sorry, coach, I can't do it. I'm in the early stages of late menopause. I've been restricted.
Only for a day or two, though. Each of us is different with our symptoms. And so some people really suffer from terrible, terrible hot flashes. And so if they're having hot flashes during the day, then it's not a good time to be doing aerobic exercise. I actually had to learn that myself before then I looked it up. I don't know why I didn't look it up first, but I learned, you know, so I would exercise in the evening and I would have had, you know, hot flashes all during the day at work. And then just before I would go home, I would do an aerobic workout. So you didn't want to be around me because I was already hot. And then I became hotter. Then I became crankier. And, you know, then I realized, I should be doing my strength training on these days, not my aerobic exercise on these days.
I used to teach high school biology, which some of our listeners may or may not know. And one of the topics that we covered in the curriculum for grade 12 bio was female hormones. And I can assure you that my students would tell you that it is complicated. So what are the major hormones that have a role in this menopause transition? And just to give our listeners a little bit of an idea and exposure to these words so that they, when they potentially see something in media or they go and talk to their doctor, they kind of have a little bit of background information as to what they need to discuss or know about.
All right. So, you know, I often are known for being sarcastic. And so sometimes when I'm lecturing, I would say we have two of the strongest and then the least talked about, which is the wildest hormones in our body. And before we do that, I think it's a good idea to take a step back and think about a diagram of what a menstrual cycle looks like. So, you know, if we take the norm that has been sort of perpetuated in the literature, which is 28 days, we have several hormones that are in that. One I've already mentioned, which is the follicle-stimulating hormone. And then we have estrogen and progesterone. And then we have a luteinizing hormone. And they all fluctuate throughout the menstrual cycle. And they fluctuate through different phases. And so when your students say that it's incredibly complex, they're right. And we have these interactions between two types of hormones. One is called ovarian and one is called pituitary. And so we have the hypothalamus, so the controller of our cells way up at our brain. We have the anterior pituitary gland, and then we have the gonads or the ovaries. And all of those have to work together. And that's a really important statement because if the brain tells the body to do something because you don't have enough fuel in your system, it has to shut something else down to take the calories from somewhere else to fuel your system. And that's why I think it's important for people to have a picture of the menstrual cycle in their mind. And with that, they can then segue in these hormones that change throughout the phases of the menstrual cycle, beginning with menses and ending with what we refer to as the late luteal phase. So I think if anyone wants to understand their hormones, get a picture of that in their mind, and then that will help you understand what's going on and why it's so complex. So the follicle-stimulating hormone stimulates follicular growth, and that's related to how the egg is going to eventually become part of the ovulation, and then how that will then either go on to become implanted in the placenta, or it then is shed out through through menses. And so when we think about these hormones, we realize that we can either suppress them or we can secrete them. And one of the interesting things about this, and Vanessa, you would know this from biology, is that we talk about feedback loops. So how one thing can affect another thing. And that's how regulation occurs. And, you know, we can think about estrogen. It's a bit of a driver of all of this. And so estrogen starts off high in the menstrual cycle and then does a little bit of a dip and then goes back up again, but not as high as it was at the very beginning. So it's driving the process. And then what we want to do is we want to get this ovulation to occur. And so that's where this follicular stimulating hormone comes in. And it peaks when we have ovulation. But then we have this one in the background that starts off really slow. Nobody pays much attention to it. And that's progesterone. And then progesterone peaks in the mid-luteal phase, the latter part of the menstrual cycle. And that progesterone, in my estimation, holds a lot of value for people understanding some of the things that occur when we get stressed, because progesterone competes with cortisol. And so if cortisol is really, really high, then progesterone will be affected by that and won't be quite as high.
Now, is this a major part of the algorithm that you're developing, is the monitoring of stress levels and how that may impact menstruation for high-level athletes?
So you want me to give away the secrets?
Of course. Yes. Are you allowed to?
Of course. I mean, I wouldn't say that this is unusual what we're approaching, but cortisol clearly is the way that we can measure this in athletes. And so we can track their stress either by a questionnaire. We can also track it through this biological mediator of cortisol. So there's many ways to look at this. And I think the other way that we could do this is just looking at training load and the internal and the external components of that. And obviously we have to look at fatigue as well. And then we have to look at where in the menstrual cycle an athlete might feel their fatigue. And is it different in, you know, before ovulation or after ovulation? And, you know, what happens to those hormones throughout the menstrual cycle? Because I would say that every athlete has a hormone signature, and it's not the same as the next athlete. So our goal is that, you know, we really want to help every individual athlete do what they can do for themselves so that they can have their best performance.
Oh, that's, I can't wait for this to become mainstream and usable, and to give insight for athletes, female athletes in particular. It's going to be a really incredible tool. So thank you for the work that you're doing on that. Yeah.
We hope so.
Yeah. Now, closely related to the hormones are the symptoms that someone in the menopause transition might experience. What are these symptoms that a person would see when approaching the transition? And you had said that it can happen 10 to 15 years, like it's a long process. So this could be for someone happening in the late 30s, right? Like what kinds of symptoms should someone be noticing and recognizing that this might be part of the menopause transition? And if that's even important to recognize in the first place?
Yeah, I'm not sure that everybody would notice in their early 30s, even though they might be going through the menopause transition, they might not notice any symptoms. So all I can say is that the menopause transition is associated with sometimes temporary and sometimes long-term health consequences, that the body's systems predominantly that get affected are our bone mineral density, so our bone, our breast health, our cardiovascular symptom, mood and cognitive function, and then, of course, as I've already mentioned, a little bit related to sexual functioning. But those symptoms are classification. You could have many different symptoms that nobody else has. Like, for example, some women talk about their tongue swelling. You know, they notice that, but nobody else has that.
So I'm just thinking, like, I know a lot of people have this question in relation to having an IUD or some other form of contraception where they actually don't get another period. They don't get their period. And the question that they always ask is, well, how do I know if I'm in perimenopause or even menopause? And knowing that there's a whole ton of other symptoms that might be related to this transition period, it's basically an indication that you don't need to just look at menopause in terms of having a period and then having that cessation of period.
Not having a period is one perspective. It you might have no period for 4 months and then you have another period. So if you think about someone with an IUD, they don't have a period, but they could have all these other symptoms.
You could definitely tell on other symptoms that you're going to experience. Not so much as hot flashes, but, you know, disruption of sleep has been just rough. You know, for me, you know, fatigue, you know, headaches, migraines, a lot of symptoms that you are starting to, you know, you can tell.
Coach Jojo, you have a lot of athletes that are, you know, within this menopause transition. So have you noticed any symptoms, or have they talked about what are the typical symptoms that they have have recognized in training and racing?
You know, I think it's tricky because these symptoms could be caused by other things in their life as well. You know, they'll come to me and talk about, you know, I've been having a lot of headaches, migraines. I'm just really exhausted. I feel bloated. I've had, the one that really gets to me, and this is really what I usually attribute back to, you know, hormone levels, menopause transition, is that, you know, they'll start to tell me that they really have a lack of motivation, that they just don't have the desire. They don't have the go to do things anymore. And they're like, why, you know, I used to be so into this, and the workouts used to come so easy for me. And I like when Tish said that sometimes they even their own attitude about doing a workout, they just feel like they're not good enough in the middle of it, or they can't push to the level that they used to. And I think those are tell-all signs that something is something, I won't say off, that they, but they're in the middle of something that needs to be addressed, or something that they need to have a doctor that's willing to talk to them and help them, and not just say that this is a natural part of life. You know, that someone that will help them, you know, manage the symptoms, or and a coach that is willing to understand and adjust training so that they can be the best athlete they can be as they're going through this transition.
Speaking of symptoms and this transition, are there any of these menopause transition symptoms that are dangerous to health when training? Like, is there anything that an athlete might need to consider, or to know when to stop, or to potentially alter their training schedule in terms of their overall well-being?
You know, symptoms are the outward signs, for example, of something that's going on. I would approach it from the perspective that I think an athlete knows themselves very well. I don't think that the symptoms of menopause are related to extremeness, but they can be compounded with other things such as family history that could be a flag for the athlete to go and get further medical care.
I think it's finding a doctor that knows you as well. It's the type of, you know, athletes that I'm coaching. You know, these may be women that are going through the menopause transition, and that, yeah, they may feel off and they may not feel normal, but they're not going to stop this lifestyle. This is what makes them who they are. They are athletes, no matter what age they are. And so they need to find a doctor that is, you know, willing to help them to be successful, along with their coach. But, you know, when I am talking about an athlete, we were talking about symptoms, another thing that, you know, is super important as to coaching athletes that are experiencing these symptoms, know that they're going through menopause transition, is recovery time. In that, these athletes, you know, are going to require more recovery. That has got to be repeated over and over and over again. They may not think they do, but you're going to start to see their training suffer, their stress levels rise, then become, you know, really, you know, just disheartened about training, you know, feel like they can't meet their goals. And a lot of that times it's just too much physical and mental stress that's compounded, you know, by, you know, very intense training, where sometimes we have to back that intensity off and allow for more recovery time. I know there has been a lot of discussion regarding long endurance training for female athletes going through menopause transition as to not the typical 3-week build, 1-week recovery system, you know, that we are accustomed to, that periodization that we've been ingrained in as coaches to follow. There's a lot of variations that are popping up that would provide women more recovery time and be more successful in achieving their goals, and just healthier, you know, overall well-being.
So in terms of that recovery time that's required, that extra recovery time, what would you do specifically to an athlete's program if they came to you and said, I'm feeling really fatigued and I need, I don't know, I'm not motivated to do my sessions anymore, and you flag that as needing more recovery time, what sort of thing would you implement into their program?
Well, there's two things I do. I look at it from a coaching perspective, and often that's me making hard decisions and giving them off days, giving them rest days. What 2 days off can do for a female athlete is amazing. But I also issue homework. I distract them because they are so wired to train every day and to work so hard that sometimes they won't even listen. You know, so
right.
I give them homework. Is that, you know, no, I want an hour of easy yoga or stretch session, Or, you know, like Tish said, maybe that would be a strength training or flexibility mobility day, but I give them an assignment and then I issue homework is you've got to sleep an extra hour over the next 5 days in a row. When they know it's going to benefit their training and I put it into the training as homework, even if it's not, you know, swim, bike, run, you know, then they're more apt to do it. But I also, you know, it's very important that you be able to go in and lower intensity for those sessions. You know, with Tried Out, we have some very high intensity training, but that's all adjustable. That's all adjustable depending on the individual. This applies across the board. This is a given we should have for any athlete when it comes to injury or stress in life, family situation. You know, across the board, we need to be able to adjust intensity and duration of sessions and even issue a week off if needed to do a complete reset where they spend time doing other activities that are, you know, hobbies, other things that are totally separated from triathlon or running so that they can kind of free their mind, let their body completely recover for a week and then slowly start back into it.
If an athlete doesn't have a coach when they're in this phase of their life, I think that it would be really beneficial for them to seek a coach and to make sure that coach is knowledgeable about the menopause transition and have the ability to recognize when they need that extra break. Because I know as many triathletes, they don't want to take a break and they need someone to tell them to do these things. And I think having a coach who's going to, you know, make that happen, say you need to do yoga, you need to take a week off is really important.
You know, if you can't afford a coach, if you start to think, you know, every day as you're waking up and saying, you know, really evaluating self-evaluation, how do I feel today? Am I exhausted? Am I overwhelmed? You know, we have so much stress and so many roles we play as women, you know, so many hats we wear daily that sometimes you've got to step back for a second, spend some quiet time and just say, you know, today is a day that I need to prior towards feeling better physically and mentally. And that may be just taking a walk, doing some yoga and, you know, meditating, praying, whatever you do. But those are days that are very, very important. And we need to slow down just a little bit in life and recognize that, you know, a coach can be a great, great advisor for that. But if you don't have that, you need to start implementing some of those practices into your daily routine.
Now, I think this is a perfect time for us to hear about another really good piece of news. So, Tish, I would love for you to tell me if there are any physiological advantages an endurance athlete might have over someone in the general population as they go through this menopause transition.
It's hard not to say this, but there is so much evidence that exists that the levels of physical activity, you know, are linked with superior health. I mean, that's a statement on its own, period. But it's also, when you think about menopause, women who exercise also show that in perimenopause and postmenopause that they have better muscle mass. And that's really important because I think it kind of segues into a couple of things that I can just chat a little bit about that happened to us with both aging and part of menopause. And so the first thing that we see is that as we age, we get a loss of muscle mass. And so if you have larger muscular legs when you're younger, you can be assured that there'll be a significant size decrease as you age. Those muscular legs start to change. And so we lose some muscle mass as we get older. And that means that within that muscle mass, we can differentiate between the type of fiber types that we lose as well. And so we have, just to be simple, we have slow twitch and fast twitch. And so women generally utilize those slow twitch ones exceptionally well, which is why we're such good at endurance and things like that. But it's the high-end ones, the fast twitch ones, that start to decline as we age. So I want to stop there for just a segue, because if we look at women running marathons right now, those 38, 40, 44-year-olds, they're running incredible times. They've had children, and they're just rocking it out of the park. And so that endurance bit is really solid. So That's one thing that's a good news story. So, but when we think about the type 2 ones, the fast twitch fibers, we start to lose those as we age. And so we lose a little bit of strength, it declines, and we lose some power as we get older. And so what we want to incorporate into our training routines is things that will maintain those. Because at the end of the run in a triathlon, maybe you need to do that quick sprint to get to your bike or whatever. So you need to have a little bit of ability to do that. So things like plyometrics or sprints or hill repeats or something called counter movement jumps, which is looking at eccentric, concentric, so up, down motion, helps to avoid the loss of those muscle fiber types. And then, you know, the next thing is that we have the recovery, which Joanne Jojo has really emphasized well. And we need recovery so that we don't have that risk of injury. And estrogen has a protective effect against muscle damage, which we now know, of course, is decreasing as we move into the transition and through postmenopause. And so that means right off the bat that we do need more recovery time, and we need more sleep to rejuvenate ourselves. So even if you're not a triathlete, if you're just out there, Joe, highly active person, you need more recovery, more sleep. And then I kind of want to just jump into this one, no pun intended, to talk a little bit about tendons, because I think they kind of give us a bit of a different picture. So we have tendons, you know, around our joints. And a lot of women in menopause talk about how their joints ache, and then we get more tendon injuries as we get older. So when we think about tendons, we can think about this loss of collagen that Jojo's already mentioned once, but we do get a loss of collagen. And so that collagen breaks down and makes our tendons more susceptible to these micro trauma bursts. And when that happens, then, of course, we're going to have pain and an increased risk of injury. So again, that speaks to how we need to have recovery. And I kind of want to give a heads up about Dr. Jared Fletcher, who is at Mount Royal University, because he's actually researching in this area. And his grad student is doing some work in this area, and I'm on this committee. And she's looking at what happens to the tendon through the perimenopause transition, which will be really interesting research down the road. So estrogen is everywhere in the body, so it likely affects collagen. And so we don't replace it as fast as we age. And so we heard that Jojo may, you know, think about supplementation with collagen. We also know that the shape of the tendon itself, so if you can envision your Achilles tendon, the shape of that tendon then changes because of the change of collagen. So we have a compositional change in that. And that compositional change actually tells us that we're going to have a mechanical change in our tendon. And when that happens, then we reduce the stiffness of the tendon, which means then, of course, we won't have the same ability to spring off. We'll have a change in our how our body hits the pavement, and we react to that. So that's called ground reaction force. And we will also not be able to have the same sort of eccentric deceleration that occurs. So there's a lot of things that change related to estrogen and as we age, which kind of segues into the fact that we really need to be thinking of estrogen, that it's quite an advantage for us when we're, you know, younger. And we need to find a way to maintain that advantage as we get older. And I think the human body has done that by the fact that women are just so good at endurance exercise as we age. We get better and better. So I think the idea that we think about in a tendon is that if we want to maintain the tendon tendon ability as we get older, those slower movements that we do, how we load the tendon can make a difference. So I think it's kind of fun to think about that as we transition forward in life, there are different ways to maintain our physique, and those ways that we maintain our physique can be very positive in terms of the types of activity we're doing, particularly if you're a runner or a triathlete or a long distance swimmer. We've just seen that movie with NIAID. you know, crazy that you could swim so long, so far with the same pace, right? But, you know, I think that's why we come up with that expression that women get better as they get older.
I love that expression. So we've talked about plyometrics as being something that is important to incorporate into training program. Also the loading of the tendons. So like those mobility exercises that we've all been seeing on Instagram, just like you said, Tish, are super important. Can we dive into, I know this is a topic that a lot of people don't necessarily talk about because there's been such a bad rap about it. But in order to preserve that estrogen and progesterone, can you tell us what the situation is with hormone therapy and if this is something that everyone needs to consider or just a small population of people, or talk to us about hormone therapy?
All right. So the first thing that we should say is that, we've already said it several times, that every individual is different. And therefore, the individual should go to their healthcare provider and have that conversation with their healthcare provider about their symptoms, and then their healthcare provider, and they can do a shared decision making in terms of whether hormone replacement therapy is right for them. If we go back historically, we found that hormone replacement therapy got a bad rap because of a clinical trial that was going on, and about 5 years into the clinical trial, there was an increased risk associated with cancer. And so they stopped the clinical trial because of that. But they didn't actually have an opportunity to really go further in that clinical trial. So I would say that today, hormone replacement therapy has a very different perspective about it when you go talk to people. And I would actually say that, you know, the narrative is moving towards maybe hormone supplementation. All right, so a different way of approaching it. And so when we think about supplementation, we know that estrogen, has many receptor sites in the body, and that maybe supplementation, actually the ability to bind to the receptor sites, just needs a little bit more estrogen to facilitate that. Not a lot, but just a tiny bit. And that can make a huge difference in both symptoms that someone is having. But there may be some, you know, research right now that's occurring that looks at joint health. And having those estrogen receptor sites around our joints would then, if we were able to come to an agreement with our physician and the individual to have supplementation, that might change their joint pain. And if you change joint pain, you're going to be more active. And if you are going to be more active, you're going to be more positive. And really, that's what we need in the end, is a positive attitude. So I don't think this is a no-go subject. I think this is a very responsible way to talk about how we can assist the body with maintaining ourselves in a way that is contributes to function and also our better health. Because in the end, you know, we could talk about collagen function collagen supplementation, or, you know, eventually we're going to talk about creatine supplementation, whatever it is, you know, this really could fit within that that line of things.
What are your thoughts on creatine supplements for perimenopausal, menopausal, postmenopausal women?
I think it comes around to what we've been talking about, is that, you know, we need to know each individual and what's going on in their lives. So first of all, let's start off with creatine is actually lower in women than men. So, you know, we can't compare males and females. And that if you're an exercise physiologist or an exercise scientist, you know, you probably get really excited when someone mentions creatine, because we have creatine metabolism as kind of a key of energetics. And, you know, we can synthesize creatine. So there's a biosynthesis of creatine. So we call that an endogenous source. Or we get it from our diet, as we've talked about previously. So fish, meat, dairy, chicken, you know, that's also where we can get it from exogenously. And creatine is so important because it maintains our intracellular stores of adenosine triphosphate, so ATP as we call it. And old ATP, you know, the powerhouse within the mitochondria, that's always the expression we use. We can't do anything without ATP. And so because our systems require ATP, it means that you know, if we have a lack of creatine occurring as we get older, there probably is a consequence of feeling fatigued because of that. Now, the key is, can creatine make a difference to us? And if we were to start with diet first, I would say look at someone's diet and see what they're eating. That's, you know, the number one go-to. Then I would say, if diet doesn't make a difference, you know, will supplementing with creatine make a difference? And I think it's important to think about this creatine pathway, because we have two isoforms of creatine. We have the CKBB, so that's the one that affects our brain. And then we have the one that affects our muscle, so CKMM. And those isoforms are so important for maintaining both our brain health and our rest of our health, right? So you can see where I'm going to go with this, that if you don't have enough creatine, it's a little bit, like not having enough hormones, enough estrogen. You really do need creatine. But the amount of creatine that you need, I think, is the key. So if we increase the uptake of creatine as we age, you know, will the outcome be that we have decreased fatigue? And I want to say that there are a lot of knowledge gaps in this area still, that we haven't completely figured this out. But we can go back and say, we know that creatine is localized within the muscle. We know that it's localized within the brain. So it could be that a small amount of supplementation with creatine could make all the difference in the world. And that's, it's not going to be like a huge amount of creatine. 2.5 grams per day is probably a lot and probably will do make a difference in someone's outcomes as they, you know, get used to absorbing the creatine in their system. And not everyone does well with creatine because part of the problem with creatine is when you supplement with creatine, it upregulates and causes osmolality. So it increases the amount of water within the cell. And that's a good thing in the sense that that cellular swelling stimulates a pathway, the activity of it. But it doesn't, not everyone likes that. That feeling doesn't always work with everyone. The other thing that creatine does is it helps us in terms of inflammation. And so there is an oxidative stress effect with creatine, which is kind of protective against inflammation. So, you know, it's, although the research is equivocal, there's, you know, you could be on one side of the fence and show great results and on another side of the fence and show no results. Again, I would say it's an individual situation. And for someone, it might make a difference. And for others, it might not.
I was saying, I think that's really great, you know, personal experience. I like how Tish says it, it's based on the individual. You know, I wasn't thinking of taking creatine until I met with my nutritionist, who is also an Ironman athlete. She's, you know, been in the sport for a long time. And when she suggested it, I was like, what the heck? I'm not taking creatine. I'm not getting juiced. I was like, what are you talking about? And, you know, the amount she prescribed is so small, you know, added to your smoothie in combination, you know, with other supplementation and collagen, things that we've talked about. And I don't know if it's psychosomatic. I do feel better. I do, you know, I feel like, you know, as Ironman athletes, we are constantly suffering from inflammation, you know, whether it's, you know, we're at a constant battle with inflammation. And so any tools we can use to keep us in the game longer, are great. So that's been my experience with taking it.
Now, speaking of nutrition, Joe, I'm just curious if you have any insight for athletes in terms of the nutrition and how nutrition might need to change when experiencing this menopause transition. What do you think about?
I think, you know, one thing that we didn't talk about, which is probably the number one, discussion I have with, you know, my female athletes who are going through menopause transition, is a lot of them come to me saying, I've gained a lot of weight and I can't seem to you know, maintain a lower weight like I used to. I'm doing the same amount of activity. I'm taking in less calories, but I just can't lose this, you know, midsection weight. You know, and the first thing I tell them is, you know, I'm not a certified nutritionist. That is not my specialty. So I do suggest that if they really, really want to get a handle on that, two things, you know, doctor, blood work, see what's going on. Number two, is to invest in a nutritionist that can help you with your macros. And most of the time, you know, they're really depriving themselves of what they need to maintain the level of training that we, you know, we're asking them to do. So they're not fueling, they're not adequately fueling their workouts. Timing is really off when it comes to good carbs and good protein that is going in. So, you know, even a little bit of investment in nutritional help can be such a game changer for women that are going through this menopause transition. So that is a symptom. When we're talking about symptoms, that's one that definitely comes to mind. From my perspective as a coach, I'm constantly harping on them about enough protein. I know that most women are not getting enough in, and it's hard to, you know, I'm not a big meat eater. It's very tricky for me to maintain levels, you know, getting in enough protein each day. So, you know, but if you do work with a nutritionist, they can ensure that you are getting, you know, enough of those in. As far as hydration throughout the day, we also all fall guilty of not, you know, hydrating throughout the day, which can, you know, you can feel terrible if you get behind. And then secondly, this, you know, with supplements, that's where I get worried about people, because people will start taking 50 to 60 supplements per day, thinking that this is going to improve their well-being. They're going to feel better. They're going to have more energy. And a lot of that is not even being absorbed. That's where I'd be careful. And you need to be checking with your physician on what you are taking, especially in combination with all other things. I do find that collagen, which Tish has touched on, and the creatine have been helpful for a lot of my female athletes that are in the midst of this menopause transition. So that is something I would check with a nutritionist and your doctor about incorporating into your daily routine.
What kind of lifestyle adjustments can a female make in terms of stress management to help health and well-being during this transition period?
I was going to say, from a coaching perspective, you know, this is I often say your advisor, counselor, coach, therapist, all in one, because it's easier to look from the outside at other people's world sometimes, and not so much your own always. But, you know, when you're looking at an athlete that is extremely stressed, struggling in training, you know, I'll often ask him or her to write out, you know, what are their goals right now? You know, if there's five things they want out of life, you know, in the next month, in the next 6 months, next year, that's often a wake-up call for some of them as to, you know, we all talk about balance in life, and like, I want to balance training, I want to balance work, I want to balance family time, I want to, you know, have self-care, but we're not doing that in any way, shape, or form. And so that often allows them to say, you know, here are some goals, but, you know, this is a healthy way for me to approach them. You know, so when we talk about lifestyle changes when it comes to menopause transition, I think we touched on it before, in that, you know, women are very guilty of not prioritizing self-care or making changes in their lifestyle. We say we're going to do it, and then we put on a different hat every hour, you know, and so, but sometimes taking a little bit of time to structure that and plan it. We're so good at planning and structuring everything else. There are other things that we've loved in life in years past that often get put by the wayside, because our number one goal is to complete this Ironman and to make sure my kids have, you know, every meal perfectly healthy. And, you know, and I think we got to cut ourselves some slack sometimes. But, you know, kind of even having a coach or a therapist or a friend to even talk to and just map out, you know, what are my real priorities? What are the really important things right now? And kind of create more balance in our lives. And that often means sometimes taking a step back a little bit from training, from work, from all sorts of things to just overall improve our well-being and make us happier individuals.
So that's a great segue then into thinking about that you're going to have some symptoms related to menopause. You're going to age, your physiological profile as an athlete is going to change. So if we know all that, then we know that there will be ups and downs with stress. And so we should think about what is the plan when we do get stressed. And we should work on that plan as we move forward. So we could say, well, the best plan is to ensure that you do all the other things right. So exercise regularly, you know, diet, etc. But I think it's more than that. I think it's the idea of knowing yourself and knowing that these things may trigger your stress, and then trying to work on reducing those triggers. And stress is one of those things that we're going to have stress in our life. We're going to have lots of good stress, but we're also going to have lots of stress that causes us, you know, certain symptoms like racing heart rate and feeling anxious, etc. And so we need to mitigate those stresses and put a plan in place. And that's just like being an athlete, is learning to adapt and change on the fly. And that's what we need to do.
So this conversation has been amazing. Thank you both to Tish and Coach Jojo for coming on here and talking all things about menopause transition. And I think I'd really like to round out this conversation by giving people an idea of where they can go for evidence-based, informative, understandable information regarding the menopause transition. Because a lot of people will go to the internet or they'll listen to their friends and think that they should take this supplement or that supplement. And it's not necessarily the best source of information. So where can you suggest that someone could go if they have questions or concerns, or if they want some really solid information?
Well, I would start off and defer and say that if someone really needs to get something answered quickly related to a health issue, they should always speak with their healthcare provider. And in Alberta in particular, our healthcare providers have moved to something called shared decision making. But that means that you can have a conversation with your healthcare provider, and it means that you're on equal footing, that you can give some information that you might have looked up and run it by your healthcare provider. So that's the first place I would say. The second thing is I would ask people to think about a way to find how to research your questions, and that you ensure that you you look at the source of where that information is coming from, because it's important to have evidence base, but it's also important to take that evidence and translate it into something that is usable for the individual. And then I would say, you know, when you're having a conversation with someone, fact check. Don't believe everything that everyone tells you, because our personal experiences create biases, and sometimes that creates a problem for us. So fact check your conversation. And apart from that, I mean, there is a lot of good information available on the internet. It's just be diligent in how you view it and how you use it. But then the last thing I would say is, you know, never underestimate, as we move through our life, the value of a quality routine or a value of a quality training program. And think about the tweaks that we need there. Think about the adaptability and think about pivoting. And understand that your key to your success comes from you. And you really can't beat a good diet and good sleep. So if you really have to, get some really nice pajamas and enjoy them.
One comment I give to all of my athletes, whether female or male, is we all strive for such perfection. And I tell them that in any training cycle, any training journey, any triathlon journey, it will not be perfect. It will not be perfect. And so I don't expect perfection on a daily basis. I don't expect perfection on a mesocycle of training, that we do have to pivot, and we have to have grace for ourselves. And when we do that, we're going to be much happier athletes, much happier humans.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Well, hello there, everyone. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. And I know you've all been anxiously awaiting the Coach Cooldown tip, and I am most pleased to have with me Louise Stridham.
Louise is a rock star on multiple levels, and she's joining me all the way from Pretoria, South Africa, where she lives with her husband and her 3.5-year-old daughter, affectionately known by her athletes as Coach Junior. Louise is the owner and head coach at Infinitude Multisport Coaching and incorporated TriDot into her business in 2019. She was a provincial age group winner and was also the first South African female triathlete to get selected to take on Patagon Man Extreme Triathlon in Chile. She specializes in beginner and intermediate athletes and has had great success with helping athletes reduce training and racing anxiety. Welcome to the show, Louise.
Thanks so much, Vanessa. I'm really excited to be on the Cool Down.
I am so excited to have you here. And we usually start off with something that most people don't know about you. So something that you shared with me that most people don't know is that you cry, like hardcore cry, ugly cry, you might have said, during emotional advertisements on TV. And I am so with you on this one. I know that the audience can't see us right now, but I'm like tossing high fives at the screen because I get it, Louise. So what is it specifically that gets the tears flowing for you?
Oh my goodness. So whenever there's animals involved, one specific, it's a telecommunications company, and you see this dog, boxer dog, running over the fields and jumping the fences, and here in the background there's a phone ringing. And then he comes into the house and he's excited and the answering machine goes on, and then you hear this voice that says, "How's it, pilot?" And the dog just gets excited and starts tripling, and then it shows this man is calling his dog from Japan. Aww. Obviously on the vehicle. I just like, I bore my eyes up every time in the advertisement. 15 years old, if I see it, I'll cry.
That's, yeah, I totally get it. It's animals for me and babies and like when people are kind to elderly people. Those are the three things that make me lose my ability to control the tear flow.
and it's the ugly
cry. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a nice release of emotion, so it's all good. All right. Well, let's get to our tip. So what do you have for our listeners today?
So my coaching tip for every and any athlete, doesn't matter if you are beginner, intermediate, you know, age group podiums, you know, world championship slots, is to invest in your training. And when I say invest in your training, it's really learn about what your program is about. Why do you have zone two workouts? Why do you have threshold intervals? Why is there a developmental phase, a race prep phase, an endurance phase? You know, why are you doing spin ups? Why are you doing running drills? How's that helping you? So investing in your own training is going to make you a better athlete. So you're going to understand your body, you're going to understand where you are in your program, and training is just going to be so much more enjoyable. Read articles, ask questions. If you don't know the answer, you know, figure things out. And really, as much as you invest in a training program, what you pay per month, or you pay your coach, you know, invest the time in really getting to know why you're training the way that you are training.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on this one. I know that when athletes in particular join TriDot, it's like this massive influx of information, and learning how to use the system and everything can be kind of overwhelming. And so one of the things that I think is important to add to that is that it takes time to get to know your training program and to know that it's okay to not understand everything all at once. Especially, you know, the ins and outs of all of the drills and the reasoning behind that, the zone two, like you mentioned. And I think it's really important to take it slow and to make a point of learning something, make a goal for yourself, maybe learning, you know, something new every week or every session or something like that.
Exactly. And there's so much information out there. If you go into, so most of us, we log into the TriDot site and you log into your dashboard and there you go. But there's that whole knowledge base. Read about what is the Train X score all about. Read what is the Race X all about. Read about Environorm. Educate yourself. So when you do get stuck in the program and you don't really know, you know, like, oh, wait, I read that article, listen to that podcast. You know, really, really educate yourself. And I mean, there's a massive Facebook group for TriDot. You know, go and type in whatever you're wondering about in the search bar and see if someone else has had the same question. and go from there. So it's really, I think most athletes would say, you know, I'm not sure if I'm coachable. You are coachable, but, you know, just, you know, take a little bit of time and educate yourself, because then you're also going to feel that you are investing in your training. And that's at the end of the day, what we do, we invest coaches and programs and training.
I think, Louise, you have hit the nail on the head with a hammer with that one. I think it's really important to utilize that IamTriDot Facebook page. It is full of questions. And like you said, just enter in that your whatever you need to find out, enter it in the search bar, and guaranteed someone has asked that question before. And that goes for athletes who aren't even using the TriDot training platform. It's just like this little dictionary of knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you don't know the answer, Google. But, you know, also just be aware of what sources you are going to follow. You know, if it's some random triathlon dude 012 exclamation mark, you know, and his favorite page is Wikipedia, maybe not there. But educational sources. I mean, there's Triathlete Magazine, there's Outside. Go for it and do the research and do the reading.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.